You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferrat.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. Yesterday, Baltimore Mayor Stephanie Rawlings-Blake lifted the citywide curfew that had been in place for five nights. The curfew was in response to unrest in response to the death of Freddie Gray, an African-American man who died of injuries he got while in police custody.
Maryland Governor Larry Hogan said he supports the mayor's decision and is starting to pull out National Guard troops. Now that things are at least starting to return to normal in Baltimore, a lot of analysts and experts are looking closely at how the media covered the events in Maryland's largest city.
Mike Wagner is with us to analyze media coverage of Baltimore and other stories of police and protest. He's an assistant professor in the School of Journalism and Mass Communication at UW-Madison. Mike, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, there's this saying in journalism, if it bleeds, it leads. Mm-hmm. Is this what happened as you see it when it comes to media coverage of Baltimore?
Well, I think it fits the pattern of how the news media cover these kinds of events, whether it's the riots in Los Angeles in 1992 or what's been happening in Baltimore over the last few weeks. And so usually you have some sort of incident that sparks interest from the community, sparks some outrage from the community. Usually these are because of long-standing issues that haven't gotten a lot of attention. And then those issues continue not to get a lot of attention because the first pictures are people in the streets. Maybe sometimes, in some cases, these uprisings or unrest gets violent, and then that gets a lot of media attention. And in the first couple of days of these sorts of things, you get a lot of live information in a way that only the news media can kind of provide. And then you get repeating the same loops of violence ad nauseum, which provides much less value, but gets played much, much more, and it kind of skews people's perceptions of what's happening and why it's happening. And, you know, this has been a typical riot / unrest coverage by the news media.
And Jon Stewart has not been silent on this. Here's a clip from The Daily Show last week where he compares coverage of the riots in Baltimore against a backdrop where they don't look so different from riots by mostly white people.
The lawless, destructive riots shaking our nation. No, those are Kentucky fans. I'm sorry, after losing. The lawless... No, I'm sorry, that's Michigan State fans after winning. That's a pumpkin festival gone awry. Come on, those are just kids blowing off steam with good-natured arson. Yeah, there you go. That's the worrisome, let's call it urban violence we were looking for.
And back to Baltimore there at the end. What is your reaction when you hear that?
Well, I think it shines a light on a typical problem with coverage, especially when there are violence violence erupts in response to kind of long-standing issues where a particular community, often the black community, has with those who are in political and economic power. And, you know, there's not a political or economic power you're riding against when your basketball team loses a game, but there is often when something like what's happening in Baltimore is happening. And so that kind of stuff gets treated differently. MSNBC made a really nice point in some of the stronger coverage last week where All In's host Chris Hayes ran a long segment talking about white culture and the culture of white rioters and the culture of white lawlessness and all this kind of thing. And at the end said, if this sounds ridiculous, it sounds just as ridiculous when people say black culture and black rioters and that sort of thing. And so it brought race out in a way that it typically isn't in coverage of this kind.
Well, it's interesting that you use the phrase in a longer segment because it seems like to draw out the issues that you're talking about. Social injustice, a lot of context, history. You do need a longer segment.
You do.
And we don't live in that kind of media environment in general anymore.
That's right. That's right. You need, you know, viewers and show hosts and guests and newspaper reporters willing to take the time it takes to unpack these kinds of issues. And it's so much easier to show a live shot of the people in the streets and speculate about what's going on than it is to say, well, we can trace some of this back to housing policy and the way housing policy segregated communities, and that affected how much money went to schools, and that affected how people were able to do later in life. That's a lot longer of a story to tell, and it requires expertise that the average talking head pundit who worked for one political campaign once 15 years ago has to bring to bear on television.
And you can see, if we're talking sort of just expressly about cable news right now that was reporting as it happened, that the shots they would assume people would want to see would be the fire, would be the riot. But on the other hand, you know, I follow this mostly on Twitter, and there were some amazingly powerful pictures of sort of hope and bridge building and real humanity, emotion reaching out, pictures that captured that and coverage that captured that. So is there just a natural bias based on who you are and what your medium is?
Yeah, I think there's something to that. You know, part of the beauty and the problem with our current media landscape is that you can find almost any kind of coverage that you want. And so if you want to know, well, are there stories of people trying to tell complicated stories or hopeful stories about what's going on in Baltimore, you can find it on social media. But when you have the bottom line advertising dollar driven eyeballs watching your television station cable news world, they're going to be showing the video that's the most compelling, that's the most likely to get people to stop and look, and that usually is violent video.
And CNN in particular came out of this discussion about coverage with a little more critique going on. Here's an interview that aired last Tuesday. Wolf Blitzer speaking with DeRay McKesson, an activist who was in Baltimore.
But at least 15 police officers have been hurt, 200 arrests, 144 vehicle fires. These are statistics local police have put out, 15 structure fires. There's no excuse for that kind of violence, right?
Yeah, and there's no excuse for the 7 people that the Baltimore City Police Department has killed in the past year either, right?
We're not making comparisons. Obviously, we don't want anybody hurt, but I just want to hear there should be peaceful protests, not violent protests, in the tradition of Dr. Martin Luther King.
There should be peaceful protests, and I don't have to condone it to understand it, right? That the pain that people feel is real, and you are making a comparison. You are suggesting this idea that broken windows are worse than broken spines, right? And what we know to be true is that the police are killing people everywhere. They're killing people here. 6 police officers were involved in the killing of Freddie Gray, and we're looking for justice there.
A lot going on in that one clip. But what do you hear? What strikes you first off the
bat? The thing that strikes me the most, and I've watched that a few times now over the last couple of days, is when Wolf Blitzer says, I want to hear you say that there should be peaceful protests. That is not a reporter's job to tell a source what they're supposed to say. It is not a reporter's job to say, you need to tell me this. People can protest however they choose. And for the reporter, in this case Wolf Blitzer, to make the case that there's an appropriate way to respond is not something he should be doing as a journalist, especially on a network that is purporting to be a news coverage network and not an ideologically driven network.
Right. I mean, I think the first question he says is there's no excuse for this kind of violence, right? And then he gets another question back, which is, you know, obviously I don't agree with that. So do you think in that moment that that's a safe thing to say, that everybody agrees that there's no excuse?
I think that he's quite confident that the average CNN viewer holds that view. And so, you know, part of this is about markets and audience and who's watching. And I think he probably felt that, you know, it's always dangerous to read somebody's mind, and I don't know what's in Wolf Blitzer's heart, but I imagine he felt safe making that assumption.
Would you say that there's been racial bias in the coverage?
Yeah, I think it's always a tricky thing to talk about, but when these sorts of things happen and white people are involved, they're not identified as white. And when black people are involved, they are always identified as black. And, you know, that's probably no accident. And so there is a bit of racial bias just in terms of how we label things. Also, whether we call them riots or unrest or, you know, revelers gone too far, like in a basketball game situation. But it's the same. It's a building is on fire in either case. So why is one a riot and one not?
And Wolf, also in that clip, he evokes Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., and that seems as though something that he thinks everyone can agree upon, but it's not a cut-and-dried issue in this particular scenario, especially judging by the guest response. What other people have said, that sometimes you have to use violence to be heard, is what some protesters in Baltimore said. What do you think about his evocation of Dr. King?
Well, that's an easy place for the news media to go when something that isn't peaceful is going, and when this is happening. Everybody agrees that Martin Luther King was an amazing civil rights leader, and so shouldn't we all follow the example of nonviolence? But King himself often spoke about violence in a way that at least understood it, even if it wasn't his own particular strategy. And of course, you know, if we want to talk about violence and its utility in overcoming injustice, we could look to, say, the Revolutionary War or the Civil War or other things where people are quite happy to support the violence that took place when the United States broke up with England and, you know, used violence to do so.
So if you were producing the cable news and any one of these networks. Maybe you think some of them did a better job than others, but what would you say about getting some of the nuance in the context, the history that might be more geared towards solution or at least understanding than just here's what's happening now?
Well, you've got to do what's happening now, right? That's newsworthy. You know, if a building is on fire, if people are in the streets, if there's a curfew that's being violated, that's all worth attention. The question is how much. And I think what, if I was running a cable news network, what I would do is I would send people to the area and have them spend, while my live reporter was showing what's happening now, I'd give the other people 2 days to find local community activists who can talk about the context of what's going on. Well, what have they been working on in local civic groups? And what regular people do these local civic leaders deal with on a daily basis? And can we talk to them too? And then I would try to identify people in the area who study issues that are going on that relate to the topic at hand. So economic inequality or policing, a police strategy, and you know, police community relations. So I would try to find experts, I would try to find local activists and local people who can put the issue into a context, because most networks are parachuting a reporter in who, you know, haven't been to Baltimore, maybe have been there once or twice and don't know the community in the way that other folks do. I would also spend time finding out what the local newspaper is covering, what the local public radio is doing, what the local public television is doing, and seeing people who do longer form stories on issues in the area have done, and try to find ways to bring that information into context with what's happening now.
We're talking with journalism expert Mike Wagner about how the media covered the unrest in Baltimore over the last week.
We're taking your calls, too, at 800-642-1234. What do you think about what you're seeing in the media coming from Baltimore? How about other instances of police-involved deaths and the protests that followed, places like Ferguson or Madison and Milwaukee? What do you think the media could do differently, could do better? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We're picking up our discussion now about how the media is covering the recent unrest in Baltimore with UW-Madison journalism professor Mike Wagner.
And you can join in at 800-642-1234. What's your reaction to the way news outlets are covering Baltimore? What do you think could be done better? Do you see comparisons to the other incidents we've seen over the last year of police-involved deaths and protests in response? What kind of information do you want to see when it comes to these stories? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
And Mike, one issue that comes up in coverage of things that are happening in the moment, like the unrest in Baltimore last week, is that if you're covering it live, you have to have a response. You can do so much of showing and telling what's going on, but they always have to have someone on to explain it. Is that part of the problem, that we in the media today have to be so quick to respond that there isn't really time to digest and sort of assimilate what's going on and frame it properly?
It's really difficult, because most people who are kind of at the ready to be the guest with an anchor live on television when something is happening is probably not, you know, equipped with the kinds of things we talked about right before the news segment, which is, you know, knowing local activists, knowing people in the community, knowing what scholars have to say about the issue at hand. And so it's difficult to do anything other than to speculate or to kind of fly by the seat of your pants, which is, you know, usually the worst thing you want to be doing when you're talking live on television, especially in a case where something active is happening, where there might be a public safety issue, where there might be initial framing of a situation that might guide how all the viewers tend to think about it from that point forward. The first thing we see, you know, when we're introduced to something new has a powerful effect on how we think about it.
Let's go to our callers now. We have Sarah on the line in Lafarge. Hi, Sarah.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just, I didn't really have a question. I sort of just wanted to make a comment about how I perceive the media at large, not necessarily our media that we're speaking on right now, but when these things happen, like in Baltimore and Ferguson, we tend to hear a lot of, for lack of a better term, victim shaming, justification of deadly use of force against, let's face it, young black men. It's very common. And we often hear that they were perceived as a threat. They were perceived as a threat, and then they ended up dead. And oftentimes we find out later on that there were no weapons on this person, or, you know, they hadn't actually committed any act of violence. And I really wish that we could see the conversation on our local media sources and our nationwide media sources change and not justify these acts of violence happening.
Gotcha. Thank you so much for calling, Sarah. And do you perceive that too, Mike? Do you see victim shaming going on, a sense of needing to explain what happened?
Yeah, it depends on who you're reading or watching, but there is a lot of that in especially the cases that we've seen a spate of recently involving the police and a citizen that died at the hands of the police. And so often the news media will search for, well, what was that person doing before that person was killed by the police? And often that can come off as shaming the victim, right? So if someone is running from a police officer, they might be blamed for that, when in fact maybe the person was scared for their life, which then ended, right? And so there are other explanations that could also, you know, explain what's happening. And we don't get a lot of those other ones. And the main reason is that the person that we could talk to learn about their motivation has died, and so we can't interview them. And the police have an official spokesperson structure, and that's new sound, that's new audio, that's new video, and so that's a way to drive the story forward. And so the structure of the news kind of biases it in favor of the institution that is being discussed, and it often opens up an opportunity for things to be said about the victim that the victim, of course, can't refute.
Do you think there need to be protections for victims, not sort of the way you have protections for the information involving sexual assault survivors? Is that something that, if not, you know, put in place, or something that should be considered?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. It's always a challenge when we think about ways that we want to structurally limit what it is the news media can report, because it's very easy to go down the road of, well, when do we stop structurally limiting what it is the news media can report? But there are cases, you know, when somebody dies, usually a name isn't released until, you know, a coroner gives you a say-so as a reporter or something like that. And so, you know, there are things to think about, or it might be a situation where journalists might want to see if the family is ready for a name to be released and those sorts of things. But, you know, especially when there's an officer-involved situation, so people that we're paying with our tax dollars have been involved in some kind of, you know, situation that's resulted in a citizen of the area or a human being, regardless of whether they were from the area, being killed, the public has a right to know who that was and what happened in that situation and what's going to happen afterwards.
We're talking right now with Mike Wagner, UW-Madison journalism professor, talking about media coverage of the recent unrest in Baltimore. We'll go back to the phones now and take a call from Thomas in Union Grove. Hi, Thomas.
Hello. I've been listening, and I just would like to ask your guest how much media coverage should be given to police officers that are killed in this country, and not even counting the thousands of officers that are assaulted in this country annually.
All right. Thank you, Thomas. Is there an obligation by the media not just to report on victims of maybe police violence? Many of these cases are still in play right now, but also police who've been injured or killed.
Oh, sure. And they do. In fact, kind of dispassionate content analyses of when an officer is killed versus when citizens are killed by officers, which gets more attention? The police officers getting killed gets more attention. People tend not to see that because they tend to only remember things that they don't like about the news media and not things that they do. But police officers getting killed in the line of duty gets much more attention from the news media than officer-involved shootings tend to. Police officers getting killed are less likely to result in days of wall-to-wall live coverage, like an urban unrest or a riot situation are, though. And so those kind of punctuated events that happen are wall-to-wall coverage, which tends not to happen when police officers are killed. And there's not a lot of attention when officers are hurt in the line of duty. So the caller, I think, was talking about both of those kinds of things. So there's less attention given by the media when that happens, and perhaps there ought to be more of it.
And as we watch this sort of national story or movement unfolding, stories like Ferguson, stories like South Carolina with Eric Garner, what do you hope the media can give its citizenry to make them better informed and to work towards cultural solutions?
Well, it would be nice if we had more attention that focused on why there are these problems between, kind of police officers and police departments and communities and particular segments of that community? And is it just a police issue, or is it something that's much larger? Is it an economic issue? Is it an issue about job opportunities? Is it an issue about education? Is it an issue about people feeling safe where they are? And so all of these things probably matter, and we don't get much attention on those things because those are it's harder to draw a direct arrow to, we know this caused that, and it's also less easy to get on the air by a deadline.
Mike, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
That was Mike Wagner, assistant professor in the School of Journalism and Mass Communication at UW-Madison. He was with us to talk about how the media covered the events in Baltimore over the last week.